Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Every week I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe, and this week is no exception. I've got the lovely John Curtis. JC, welcome.
Welcome to me because I'm available, not because I'm the best.
This is true. This is true. Nobody else was free, so we got John. But he is exceptionally good at this, I think. Anyway, so I'm very glad that he's here. But I'm even gladder, if that's a word, that we are joined every week by wonderful pioneers, innovators, and collaborators. And this week is definitely no exception. We have the wonderful Dr. Angus Webb. Angus, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here.
And we are very happy to have you. Angus, listen, we are very excited. You are the CEO and founder of Dynamon. And this has been going for some time. I mean, like 9 years, almost before data was a thing in all of what we're doing. But give us a little snapshot of the company that you have built up over these last 9 years and give us an insight into what your aims and goals are.
Sure. So what we are today is a company helping commercial transport fleets transition to EV. So we've built what I'd like to think is the, I'm fairly confident, the most advanced fleet transition planning software in the world. It connects data sources from fleets to data from electric vehicles, vans, trucks, buses, everything, every electric vehicle that's available to commercial fleets, and helps them plan their transition, understanding vehicles, infrastructure, cost, enabling them to get it right, and making that planning process super precise and easy. That's what we're doing today, and we can talk a little bit more about that later on. But where we've come from is all around fleet optimization. So, you know, 9 years ago, we weren't talking about EVs. It was all around saving fuel, saving cost, reducing your CO2, not eliminating it. And that spun out from the work that I did with London 2012 Olympics, where I was a scientist for Team GB. That's where I earned my PhD. And we were helping the athletes improve their performance, really get to the bottom of how to be faster, how to make decisions quickly, how to not do things that wouldn't work. So like really using data and planning and simulation to understand the real low-hanging fruit opportunities. And it was a massive success. I mean, London was awesome and we won a lot of medals and we got a lot of sort of pats on the back afterwards saying, thank you so much for being involved. It really made our lives a lot easier. So super happy with that. But what I wanted to do was I really wanted to have an impact. I was super passionate about this. And to go around another 4 years with the Olympics, for me, felt it would just be rinse and repeat. It would be exciting, but the impact would not be, you know, we'd done all the hard work. It was more just do it again. I wanted to take this incredible technology, which is the data analysis, and make it available to a massive industry. And that was the transport industry. So I built Dynamon. I founded it in 2015. And built the team since then, and we're now 20 people, and we're really, even though it feels like it's been a long time, it's day one every day. I feel like we're just getting started, and we're on trajectory to be a very big company in the future. I'm really confident about that. The need for optimization and planning is massive, and it's global, and it's going to be there for a long time. So super excited to be working in the transport industry. I never thought my career would go into the road transport industry, but I love it. I love the people in the industry. I love the passion. And I love the fact now that there's a real appetite for science and technology and really solving problems. So yeah, it's a dream for me.
Angus, do you know what? Just as you share some facts that I didn't know, we've had to chat many a time and talked about the company and all those good things. I didn't know that you got so involved in the 2012 Olympics, probably one of the most exciting periods of British sport in recent times, certainly let down by many a sporting event, but not by that one. That one was, quite the dream team, and amazing that you were a part of that whole piece.
But I mean, it just, I'm also, it just shows, sorry. Yeah, just so as when you plan something right, when you execute something well, it works, you know? And even us Brits can win if we do it right. And and honestly, it was amazing. It was just such a validation for everyone involved that when you have to spend the money, but when you do it right, it works. And so it was super exciting.
Yeah, and the other thing that comes out from all of that is that this inbuilt passion and energy and enthusiasm and determination in you. And so for me, if I'm a backer, if I'm somebody looking in on the world that Angus has built, I'm super excited. And I remember the first time we properly met. I think you'd mentioned that you were at Millbrook, a proving ground, and you had a van, and you had taken this van into a testing room and put it on. You'll have to explain to the listeners what it was you actually put them on, sort of dynamometers or I don't know, whatever they were. But you were really testing it to the nth degree. And I loved it because I thought, finally, somebody is taking the van sector seriously. And of course, that's a sector close to my heart, the whole commercial vehicle sector, but vans in particular. And you were treating it seriously and you were going to help fleets back in what must have been 2020 or maybe 2021, whenever that was. And I was really excited to see it. Tell us how much detail you've gone into to make this a thing.
Yeah, so that testing that you're referring to was when we were building our software product Zero, which is the one I introduced at the beginning. And for us, it's really important for a fleet to know how a vehicle is going to perform in their specific operation. So you can open up a brochure and it'll tell you the vehicle's got, you know, certain amounts of range. But that is for one situation. And when you're a fleet, you need to know what it's going to do in your operation. So whether it's a bus, a bin lorry, a massive heavy goods vehicle or a van, you need to know how the vehicle is going to perform for your specific operation. And that's what we were determined to be able to do, was to take, you know, rather than just one number, to provide everybody with unique data on their operations. And so in order for us to do that, we had to build our very advanced software, but also test it and prove that it worked. And so we were in Millbrook, which is this incredible facility in the UK, where you can test vehicles. And we were basically doing things on the van, checking our software, doing things on the van, checking our software. And actually in that specific example, we weren't driving the vehicle out in the out on a test track. We had it mounted on what's called a dynamometer. And that dynamometer can apply what is called road loads. So we can make the vehicle drive up a hill. We can make it drive down a hill. We can make it accelerate, decelerate, go at a constant speed. We could make it drive a theoretical journey from A to B, all in this room. And then we can compare it to our software and make sure the answers are right. So it was a very expensive place to be. I think it was costing us about £20,000 a day to be there. And for a little Dynamon back then, that was a lot of money, but we were confident that that we needed to do this work. And when we were done and we had our software and it was accurate, that would be incredibly valuable to the industry. And that's the values of Dynamon. That's what our core values is, getting the answer right. It requires more than pen and paper. It requires more than an Excel spreadsheet to transition a fleet to electric vehicles and to do it right and to do it cost effectively. And so we've had to make this investment. But yeah, that's what we were doing back then when you came to visit us, Paul.
Dynamometer. Is that right? Have I got that right now?
Dynamometer, yes. Which sounds a bit like Dynamon, right? It's a little bit where our name came from. And it's an engineering term, and that's why we're called Dynamon.
Well, you've got to tell the story now. You can't just leave us hanging. come on, Dynamon, dynamometer. Let's join the dots, please.
So, I mean, okay. So the science of dynamics is the science of motion, right? So inside our software is lots of calculations, lots of maths around motion. So that's where the dyna comes from. The mon comes from monitoring. So we do a lot of data coming into us as well. So that's the name Dynamon. It's super geeky, but that's our DNA.
Brilliant.
It's like calling you Van Chat.
Van, not diesel.
There you go.
Yes. Now, Angus, I'm fascinated by this whole area of engineering because it's such a wide field. And when we were talking earlier, you said, yeah, I'm an engineer, I studied engineering, and you've gone on to talk specifically about software. So am I right in thinking that you're a software engineer?
Me personally, yes and no. I'm not really a software engineer. I'm more of a classical engineer. I understand the physics and the equations, but I had to become one. I'm not a great one. I don't do software engineering anymore. We have at Dynamon incredible software engineers, but yes, everything is software these days. So yeah, I had to pick it up, and it was a kind of a means to an end for me, because back in the day it was just me and my software with my maths, and now it's we've got better people than me to do the maths, so the maths is even better, and then the software is incredible. Yeah,
I see. Were you always destined to do this, do you think? As a young boy, did you exhibit signs of being mechanically interested and were able to build structures and do the things which, you know, kids can do if they've got that bent? And then as you grew through school, developed your skills so that you could become the man that you are today? Or was it quite out of the blue that you discovered this interest?
I think it's been there since the beginning. So I grew up on a farm in Scotland. You fix things when they're broken. You can't just drive around the corner and get spare parts. Everything is kind of DIY. And I grew up in this environment of looking after yourself. And I love that. I find sometimes day-to-day life where everything's easy, I find it quite boring, and I like that challenge. And I think that's a little bit fatiguing for people around me, because it's maybe a bit chaotic and difficult, but I get a lot of energy from that. When it's easy, it's boring. For my 10th birthday, or one of those birthdays, I didn't get toys. I got a socket set from Halfords, and I remember this was my favorite thing. And I would take apart the lawnmower and put it back together again. And my dad would get really annoyed that the literally there was no blade on the lawnmower. He was just like, it's not cutting the grass. Oh, the blade's not on it. What's Angus been doing? So I was a real pain in the ass as a child because, yes, I was only 10 years old. I was taking everything apart. But that was what I loved doing. Really? I needed to learn to put stuff back together again. That was maybe what I learned later in life.
And not have any bits left.
Apparently there wasn't a pen in the house with a spring in it.
It's fascinating. I mean, can you put this down to something? Because, you know, as you're going through life as a young man, and it sounds like you had a very positive upbringing and you know, family was good and you were on the farm, but is there any one thing, because I mean maths doesn't naturally follow from a farmer, you know, I mean I know farmers are pretty astute in terms of the, you know, the money, the calculations and everything like that. You've only got, sorry, I'm probably going to swear, but you've only got to watch Clarkson's Farm to know that actually there is a lot of maths that goes on in the background in terms of calculations and yields and all of those kind of things. So where did the whole maths thing come? Because I actually quite like maths. I'm nowhere near as good at, you know, as yourself, but I do like maths. Where did all that come from?
So I think it's a brilliant question, because I think you can approach maths from two different angles. And luckily I was okay at maths at school, but I wasn't good. I got a B in maths. For me, that was hard. That was hard work. And it all changed when I went to university. I would say I'm actually good at maths, but at school, we were just being taught maths. And in my opinion, maths is effing boring. It's just numbers and letters. It doesn't make any sense for the sake of it. For me, where maths is really good, it's getting stuff done. You need to build a bridge. It's not going to fall down. We've got to do some maths. You want to figure out how to make a truck use less fuel. We're going to do some maths. And it's all based on solving problems. And I think that for a lot of people, including myself, it's, I can imagine a problem. I can imagine what the solution probably looks like. And I'll check it with maths. My intuition tells me the answer already, but I'm tweaking the answer with some maths, or I'm validating my decision with some maths. And it comes from problems, real world first, maths second, rather than the other way around. When you're at school, it's like, right, we're going to learn maths, children, and you're going to sit here for an hour, and I'm going to write numbers and letters on a board, and literally It's boring. It doesn't make any sense. And for a kid, I'm shocked how many people can get through those lessons. So maths is a means to an end. It's not the end in itself.
I mean, that's brilliant. So is this a sort of applied maths then?
Yes. In the sense maths is to be applied. That's its purpose. But at school, a bit like English, I hated English. I was terrible at it. But again, I write and talk so much now. English is one of the most important tools in my toolbox, like maths. And yet, when you're at school studying English, you're reading books, you're analyzing, you know, the author's meanings and subtext and metaphors, etc. And for me, I didn't like that. For me, I'd much rather be out in the real world solving problems and finding the tools to help me solve those problems.
It's interesting that not being good at maths is something which is kind of accepted in our society. If you can't read or write, there's a judgment which is placed upon you. If you can't do maths, we almost as a society say, oh yeah, I can't do maths either. So it'll be okay. And actually, it's one of those fundamentals. I am utterly useless with maths. Brilliant at English, garbage with maths. And I'm ashamed. I got a D in my first O-level. I got two E's the following 2 years and gave up and just said, I can't do this. I scraped through my tax law exam at university with the pass mark 40%. I just can't do it. You, on the other hand, are somebody who wraps yourself in it. Was it always something you could do? This abstract notion of, you know, A plus B equals C makes sense to you?
I wasn't good at maths at school. I think I am naturally good at maths. I think that I'm naturally lazy. And so if I'm not motivated, I won't do it. I think what motivated me to do it was the problem solving element of it. So I'm super interested in why boats float upright and don't flip over upside down. You know, how I'm interested in Formula One. I'm interested in sailing. I love water sports. I'm in Southampton for sailing. It's, you know, why some things are better than others is engineering and maths. I love that. And so, you know, not everyone's good at maths. That's okay, because there's so many other important ways of being valuable in the world than just being really great at maths. But yes, for me, it's all around solving problems using maths, not doing maths.
It's interesting, because I would love you to take me through the sort of science of aerodynamics. For instance, I'm a fellow Formula One and motorsport fan. And if an expert speaks to me about downforce, I understand it. I get that, because it is that application, as Paul was talking about, of a social construct, almost, that we accept these terminologies to explain something. And I'm fascinated by it. Yet you show me algebra and I just go, nah, lost. Good night.
I can give you a mini aerodynamics lecture if you want.
Oh, would you? Yeah, let's book that in. Yeah, anyway,
book,
sorry.
I was going to say, book that in. We'll swipe right for that one, or whichever way is the no. I don't know. I don't know the swiping business. Anyway, but do you know what, Angus? Because I very badly climb. I don't know if you've ever visited a place in Edinburgh called Alien Rock. Have you ever been to Alien Rock?
No, but I've been to Ratho, which was the largest indoor climbing wall in the world, which is just outside Edinburgh, which is incredible.
Okay, Alien Rock, is that in Leith?
It is in Leith, yes. We're about to do the EV rally. Time this comes out, we'll have done the EV rally, but... Mm-hmm. And we stopped last year just opposite it in the hotel
church,
in Leith.
It?
Yes, it's an old church. And so when I was in Edinburgh, I lived in Edinburgh for a couple of years, I went to church. I went to that church, Alien Rock, and climbed. But what strikes me is that climbing in its truest form, when you're out and about, is problem solving. It's probably an element of engineering. There's probably some dynamics and some motion involved. Is that what attracts you to climbing? And how much do you do? How seriously do you work? What do you do with this whole climbing business?
Yeah, I love climbing. It's an incredible sport for so many different reasons. I love other sports too. I mean, but I love being outside in nature. It really distracts me from, it's the yin and the yang. So I've got a really, you know, busy job. It can sometimes be very stressful. It can be sometimes very hard to switch off. Climbing is the complete opposite. You know, I don't think about work when I'm climbing. It's even if I wanted to, I couldn't, you know, think about work. So for me, it's an incredible way of switching off. It's healthy. I like that element of it as well. You can travel the world. I've climbed all over the world. I'd like to climb in more places around the world. You meet amazing people. It's very diverse. It's one of the few sports where you can be a completely different ability to someone else, but be climbing right next to them. So some of the hardest climbs in the world are next to some super easy climbs. So you can all hang out together. You can do it with different abilities of people together. And so, yeah, I love it. The problem solving element is very real. You've got to get from the bottom to the top, and it's scary. So you've got to overcome fear. You've got to get your technique right. Sometimes it requires training. So I've done routes which have taken me 6 months to train for. It's such a brilliant sport, and actually it's cheap. So it's one of these amazing, it's a wonder sport in my opinion.
Yeah, it's cheap until you get it wrong and then you pay with your life. Are you one of these mad free climbers? Or do you use ropes? And
oh, there's a smile. There's a telling smile.
I think the most popular LinkedIn post I ever made was me climbing without ropes. And it's the only climbing thing I ever put on LinkedIn. But it was in Mallorca, climbing over over water. And you climb up, say, 15 meters over water. I didn't fall in this case, but if you fall in, you fall in the water. It's not, it's pretty scary, not going to lie. Mm. You hope the water's deep enough. But no, I'm not trying to die. I love my life. I'm not interested in coming anywhere close to taking unnecessary risks. Climbing is one of these sports which looks from the outside risky, but I would say it's pretty safe. It's safer than road cycling, which is completely acceptable in society. Whereas climbing is seen as this kind of crazy daredevil sport, it just simply is not anywhere near as dangerous as people think it is.
And I guess that's where that analytical mind comes in, that you evaluate the risk and you mitigate the risk. There is a risk in an awful lot of things that we do. Mm-hmm. But once you've been through that process, and I suspect you like process, you are somebody who reaches a conclusion that you're comfortable with and off you go. You go and do it.
Bonkers. Yeah, I think the biggest risk in life, in my opinion, if we're going to get philosophical, is not living one's life. That is my, and that is by far my biggest fear, is to get to my deathbed, hopefully when I'm old, but and have regretted not challenging myself or doing something. So for me, that's very strong in my value set, is to get out there and try stuff.
Love that. So success then is something which is important to you, because if you're successful at climbing, then you stay alive. Successful in other areas of your life, what does that look like for you?
That's a very good question. I'm not that status orientated, and some people might think that with anyone that starts a business, they want to sort of elevate themselves. They want to be wealthy. They want to be well-regarded. But maybe this is a selfish position. I want to have a big impact. I believe I can positively make a big impact. I'm competitive, so that drives me forward as well. But yeah, I think that so many people don't reach their full potential, and I'm determined to do that for myself. And Dynamon is part of that. I've got a big personal life, you know, which is another part of it. But for me, I want Dynamon to be a global business helping fleets be more sustainable, to push the industry forward. Whether that's for selfish reasons or not, I don't know. It's hard to unpick that, really. It's a philosophical question.
And it's a philosophical question that leads me to sort of think, because you sort of said in a sort of throwaway comment, I have a big life outside of this, and I'm curious, I'm a nosy so-and-so, and therefore it makes me ask a couple of questions, because I guess everything that I'm hearing is strong, is determined, is positive, is upbeat, is take on the world, make a big impact, competitive, you know, all of those great traits. There must have been a time where you've come up against what seems to be something insurmountable, either outside of work or inside of work, which has made you stop in your tracks and think, how? What can I? I feel at rock bottom. I feel unable. I mean, have you ever come up against
yes,
that wall?
Every single day. I'm not going to lie. It's a complete misconception that anyone running a business is just success from one day to the other. It is. I would say, I'm not saying Dynamon's unique in any way, but starting a business is incredibly challenging and is fraught with failure. And you know, we don't talk about it. But things are going really well for Dynamon right now. But if you look back over those 9 years, absolutely, there's been many times when it's sort of been, and I've been lying in bed, shaking my head, unable to sleep, thinking, what the hell are we going to do? But what's amazing is that you find a way. And if you're determined and you're focused, you will. So,
but help us to understand what that looks like in practicality, because you go to bed and your head's on the pillow, shaking, thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get up tomorrow morning. When tomorrow morning comes, how does Angus Webb motivate himself? What is the process that you go through to get yourself beyond yourself in that respect?
So I've never suffered from that. I'm lucky in that regard. I'm the five stages of grief. I'm at number five very rapidly. I go through the process extremely rapidly. I don't know whether that's something strange, but I'm at number five in 5 minutes.
Fail fast.
That's the way it works.
Yeah. Sam Clark says much the same, that it's much better to fail fast and get over yourself and move on to the next thing. Find that thing that will lift you up and get you going and solving other problems.
Yeah. And look, it's not just about me. When in context of Dynamon, we have an incredible board of directors that have been supporting me since day one. I've got incredible teammates who have been here since day one, arguably. I mean, there was a few years prior to it when it was just me on my own, but we wouldn't be here with amazing people and dedicated people as well. And you know, I've always sort of worked really hard to keep the people motivated around me. You know, we can live in a mercenary world sometimes. And actually, luckily, I've got this incredibly dedicated group of people, shareholders in Dynamon at the same time as well. And I think it's ultra important to have a motivated team on a common mission.
That's brilliant, because I worried about that, because I was sitting here thinking, here's a man who's very analytical, he's clearly process driven, he's about finding solutions. Is he a leader or is he a manager? I wonder. And you've mentioned people, which is just music to my ears, because it is the people, no matter how good your software is, it's the people that will find the solutions, it's the people that will plug the gaps, it's the people that will make things a success. Have you always been a people person, or have you had to focus on that aspect of your business?
I would say that I've got better over the years. I love people. I would be very bad on my own. Maybe there's a cliche that, you know, you're either an analytical introvert or you're a people person, you're bad at maths. I'd like to think I bridged the gap. I think that if you don't work well with people, you probably can't be a good leader. But you also have to make tough decisions sometimes. And I've had to make my fair share of tough decisions over the years, which goes against people sometimes. But I think on the whole, we're building a business that's going to be big with lots of people in it, successful and driven by strong values, which I think is really important.
Absolutely. Good.
Angus, what kind of friend are you? Outside of work.
Wow, these are very philosophical.
But
it's the whole person. What I'm loving is that you are a very whole person. Some people are just all about business, but I'm getting a sense that there is a big life outside of it, climbing and sailing and the other sport, family. What kind of friend are you?
I've got amazing friends. I'm super grateful for that. And I share my life with them, you know, outside of work. And I've got an incredible wife. We're having a kid that's probably going to be here in 1 week's time, our first child.
Oh, wow.
Which we're very excited about. If he comes on time. I definitely can't complain. I'm extremely grateful to have good friends. And a lot of that's through things like climbing and sailing and other outdoor, external activities. It's just the way that I choose to live my life, and it's good.
Seems very balanced. Yeah.
Burning the candle at both ends required sometimes.
And am I allowed to note the, I don't know if it was a Freudian slip or something that is public knowledge, the sex of said child?
It's a boy. Yeah. We're looking forward to him arriving very soon. Hopefully, maybe when this podcast goes out. I don't know what the lead time is, but 1 week from now, hopefully.
Yeah, so it's your first, right?
First child, yeah. I'm very nervous, actually.
So I reckon 7 to 10 days overdue. Tell me if I'm right. But anyway, there we go. name? Or is that not public knowledge yet?
My wife would kill me if I named him on a podcast, so no, I'm not going to tell you that.
Paul, I'm fascinated by you, mate. There we are. We're talking to a man who loves data, loves evidence, and you're like, yep, it's going to be 7 to 10 days late, just based on a gut feel.
I'd tell you, if you did a straw poll of 100 women that had had a baby, I bet you it's up of 70%. I don't know, every first-time mum I've ever spoken to has been late. I don't know.
Wants to start a business on data analytics and pregnancy. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. If I just keep it at that, we've had so much data, and it's really challenging to interpret it. So yeah, there's a lot of data in the maternity space, which I would say is could be improved.
Yes, trust me, indeed. I'm a doctor.
Saw what you did there. Angus, I was going to ask you what keeps you awake at night now, but of course it's going to be your son.
Yes.
How will you cope with that? Are you used to not sleeping much?
No, I'm not used to not sleeping much because I sleep very well. So that's probably one of my big fears. And look, I've just given you a full sort of half an hour explanation of how I have a very busy job and I do a lot of things in my spare time, etc. And look, something's going to change. Important. So, change is definitely on the way. I'm super excited about it. But a big part of that is, I've got a growing team at Dynamon that are going to be, supporting me as a CEO through this process. So yeah, it's going to be a very interesting time.
So what's the future, the short-term future look like for the business? What are you aiming at?
So we have a very successful product in the market around planning transition to electric vehicles. We are mainly selling that in UK and Europe. The priority is making sure that we are keeping our customers happy in that space as it grows. So it's growing very rapidly, and we are absolutely focused on delivering that successful transition to EV. Obviously, the market is very early stages at the moment. I know EV Cafe has been around for a long time, but when you look at the numbers behind EV adoption in the commercial space, not in passenger car, but in van and above, there are still loads of growth there. So, for us at Dynamon, we want to support that. We want to help fleets transition, save money. And then we're going to look to do it in North America as well. We already do some small activities in the US, but there's a whole growth agenda there as well. And we will be raising finance for Dynamon probably later this year to accelerate that growth. So it's very clear what the future looks like for us in the short to medium term. And then beyond that, we're really interested in helping fleets operate electric vehicles. So at the moment, planning the transition, super important to get that right, buying the right vehicles, buying the right infrastructure, doing the right amount of development in your depots, choosing your energy providers, all this kind of stuff, planning everything, all about planning. But in the future, that planning is going to need to be done on a daily basis. you know, which vehicles are suitable for which routes. Vehicles are going to have different states of charge. Some things may have gone wrong from the day before. You need to recover from that. There's going to be so much dynamic planning needed on a daily basis. We're going to really kind of double down in that space in probably 12 months from now.
And in order to drive that acceleration, I mean, we've got the...
Various
puns.
Lord.
Well, yeah, sorry. I apologize, but they just, yeah. I'm a man of limited vocabulary and all the same words need reusing. Accelerate the acceleration to drive the change.
I'm tired now.
Yeah, I know. We're going to get a new government, almost certainly. And by the time this podcast comes out, we will have said new government, probably. What would you like to see from the market? But I suspect government is going to be a place of you know, I mean, you're already a part, you've received some government money around, you know, supporting, I think it's Zen Freight, it's called. You're involved now in that ZHIT trials around trucks, and it's brilliant that you guys are involved. It's super important that we've got really credible quality data analytics that are helping people make informed decisions. What would you like to see is a next step from government? Because, you know, 2030, when they hope to bring all the data to bear and all of that sort of stuff and finish the project, seems too far away to me. What are the next steps for you, and what magic wand would you like to wave and get your way?
I mean, I think there's actually not one thing. The mandates are good, in my opinion, because I think they won't happen without the mandates. And that sets the sort of landscape for the future. And everyone can plan around those mandates. But there's lots of other small things that matter. So grid upgrades, massive limitation. It's holding back the industry, sort of speeding that process up. And I know there's been some changes made for the positive. It's a long chain of lots of things that need to come together for the successful transition of electric vehicles. Energy policy, how are we going to have cheap electricity in our grid to charge the vehicles? All of that kind of stuff. And so I would say that there's lots of small things. That needs a government that's actually sort of really involved in the process. To be honest, we're going to have a change of government, but I actually think that the current government today has been quite on it when it comes to electrification, and I believe the next one will be maybe even more on it. And so I think that we're actually very lucky in the UK to have a government that is sort of knowledgeable about what needs to be done, but there's so much detail in there. So we need to have real attention to detail. For trucks, for example, if you have a truck full of pallets today and it's being driven by a diesel tractor unit and it's driven by an electric one in the future, you're going to not be able to carry as many pallets because of weight limitations. Now, a lot of contracts are based on full truckloads. So now, if you take two pallets off, you're going to have to send those two pallets on another truck, and that's just really not efficient. And so we might need some rule changes around weights, dimensions. This is all super nitty-gritty stuff that the government are going to need to listen to, and to listen to the EV Cafe, to Zemo, to the, you know, to all of these organizations which are communicating the challenges back to government. And that's just in the UK. And you've got France, Germany, Spain, America. It is a hugely challenging regulatory space, and governments do need to listen to get it right.
I've got a final question, if I may, Angus, and it's around your experience in this industry. If I was a fleet manager coming to you for the very first time, faced with the need to decarbonize my fleet, but not knowing where to start, what have you learned from all of the data and all of the work that you've done that will help me on my journey?
So what we've learned is there's a better way of doing it that'll save you money. And it'll come from a lot of different possible solutions to save money. That's why pen and paper just doesn't cut it anymore. You're going to need to do some work, some analysis. Now, if you're a fleet and you can't do that, that's totally fine. we can do that, or some of our partners can do it. We'll, you know, we sell software to a whole bunch of partners, and they can do it. We do a bit of it as well. But generally, as we grow, we're going to do much less of that work. Our software is going to be in the hands of experts that are doing it. But the analysis, the planning needs to be done. If you don't do it, you're going to enter into this very expensive, capital-intensive new world, and you're going to make mistakes. And when you're spending many tens of thousands of pounds on an electric van, or even maybe hundreds of thousands of pounds on an electric truck or a bus, you get it wrong, it's costing you a fortune. Spend the money on the planning, do the work, get it right, and save money.
Thank you. That's brilliant. Do you use AI as part of your software as a matter of interest, or is this human intelligence and data-driven intelligence?
There is AI inside our software. We used to push the AI capability to, you know, as one of our real key features. But in my opinion, AI is such a massive technology in the future. It's a bit like saying data driven. You know, it's going to be everywhere. It's in our software. It's already having a huge impact. But what you need to know is how our software helps you, not really how it works. It's not that important. You need to see a case study that someone who's done it before you has done it, and it's helped them, so that you as a fleet manager have confidence to do it for yourself, and it's going to work. But yes, AI is an amazing technology. It's saving, well, it's pushing the industry forward. It's going to save us a lot of money, but it, you know, means therefore we can pass these cost savings on to our customers as well.
It's to be embraced, not feared.
100%.
Angus, what's the thing that you're, and we're going to sort of bring it to an end with this, but you know, I really want you to, because you've done some really cool stuff. I've written a lot of this down, and we'll summarize in a minute, but what's the thing that you're most proud of? You know, for, after all of the things that we've talked about, you know, home, work, play, Olympics, Dynamon, what's the thing you're most proud of?
I'm super proud of Dynamon. I think it's an amazing organization, and it's not, you know, it's not me. I don't, you know, it just works without me now in many cases. It's just this become this incredible collection of amazing, dedicated people that know the goal, they know the mission. You know, you've met James. He's our MD. He's been on EV Cafe briefly. And our customers, you know, the fact that we've gone from 2015, knew nobody in this industry, to where we are now. And I, as far as I'm concerned, we're only really small. We haven't really properly started yet. But the fact that we're well-regarded in the industry, we've got this incredibly smart team of people, and that is absolutely the thing I'm most proud of.
Brilliant. And let me just say, I've met some of said really, really smart people, but to, you know, how to intimidate me. Oh, by the way, let me introduce you to 4 PhDs in physics. I don't know anything about all of this. It is quite phenomenal. And they're actually real human beings and know how to kind of bring stuff to life. Because that's the thing for me is can you make all of this clever stuff understandable to the village idiot? I speak of myself in that case, and John, actually, I agree with him entirely. but that's the words of a 6-year-old. Einstein was right. You know, you don't know your subject well enough until you can explain it into the words of a 6-year-old. And you guys bring the journey to life in a way that very, very, very few can. And you might be right. Zero might be the very best piece of software probably in the world, you know, because you always got to stick probably in the world, haven't you? You can't, you know, anyway, but you know, to bring that transition to life for the operator, but then also then to help them operate, it's just fantastic. But I would love to have run all of your words through one of those word cloud things, because I there were so many great words. Determined, convinced, passion, passionate, love, solving problems, creative, communication, excited. I mean, there's just so much energy in all of that. If we could just kind of create motors and batteries out of all the words that you've used today, we would have enough energy to drive one of those trucks up and down a motorway for many days, I'm sure of it. But it's been a real privilege, Angus. And Dynamon is in incredibly good hands. And arguably the industry is in very good hands as well. Because you know, if we can come to you with confidence with the problems that the truck and van commercial vehicle operators in general face daily, to come to the doctor and get a diagnosis, you know, doctors. I mean, it's a house full of doctors.
Plenty
right?
of doctors. Yeah, yeah, we've got doctors.
We've got doctors coming out of our ears in the right subject for the industry. So we need a healthy industry, and we need lots of doctors to keep us healthy. And you're doing exactly that. So it's very fantastic. John, any final thoughts?
Yeah, it's just that Angus and I have lived completely polar opposite lives. He was born in Scotland and now lives and works in Southampton. I was born in Southampton and I live and work in Scotland, but we do share a haircut. And that is one of the best things I can say. Seriously, Angus, my what you do is...
My head is suffering harder in Southampton than your head is in Scotland, that's for sure.
Absolutely no doubt. I was in London on Wednesday, 29 degrees, and I was looking for a hat, I can tell you. Now, it's been a real privilege to speak to you, and I will never, ever climb rocks, but I'm intrigued by what goes on in your head. And the aerodynamics lesson is an absolute nailed-on certainty. Thank you, my friend.
Well, you guys are both already, we're all already kind of on our way in that we're streamlined. But anyway, Angus, as John said, it's been a privilege and a pleasure. We've really enjoyed it today. Really, we wish you all the very best with your son. 7 to 10 days. Thank you. After whatever the due date is, trust me, maybe don't trust me, definitely don't. But you know, so very much wish you all the best for that. But you know, equally, the journey of Dynamon is one that, as you've said, is good with you and is going to continue to be good with you know, with a different dynamic going forward. Thank you for today. Really,
it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, guys.
Bless you. Thank you.
So everybody, I'm sure you'll agree with me that we've had a great time with Angus today. And I would encourage you that we get lots of good chats. Obviously, Angus is the best, but he's very, very good. But go and check out all of the other chats that we have. Real insight can be gained to add to the wonderful insight that we've had today. So thanks, everybody. Go and head over to evcafe.org. And you'll find all of the content there. Of course, follow us on LinkedIn. Follow Dynamon. Get onto LinkedIn. Follow Dynamon. And if you need help, reach out to Angus or James Slater on LinkedIn. And those guys will help you to understand what Dynamon can do for you and their partners. So having said all that, have a great day, everybody. And look forward to speaking to you again soon.